Scum by David Dennis, as read by the author. Chapter 2. Scum Meets a Family. I woke up in what felt like a real bed for the first time in what must have been months. Maybe years, even. It felt strange. The mattress was a little lumpy and one of the springs stuck out into my back a little, but still, a mattress is a mattress. I could barely see anything with the sleep in my eyes. I went to rub them and realized that my good arm had been wrapped in a cast that seemed to be made of papier-mâché and some sort of makeshift plaster. Suddenly I realized how itchy it was. I was itchy, blind, and in an unfamiliar room. Being saved seemed like a godsend, but now I was exposed and vulnerable, and had no idea who saved me or if I could trust them. I dealt with the sleep in my eyes with my good arm, and then used it to try and scratch whatever I could around the cast. Looking around the room again, I noted the rotting blue walls and the lack of furniture save my own bed. The only decoration was a single framed painting of a brown dog lying on some grass. Not a very good picture, it was somewhat amateurish and the proportions of the dog were slightly off. The dog looked sad too, like it was abandoned. The thought of abandonment reminded me that Suki was missing. Finding her was priority number one, just as soon as I could move. I pulled the covers off and realized that the man who found me not only put a cast on my arm, but bandaged my rib cage as well. He did a good job, too. These bandages looked medical grade. He also took my pants. I tried sitting up, but instantly a sharp pain shot through my abdomen and I fell back down on the bed. I suddenly felt like I was staring a gift horse in the mouth. I was in a bed, after all. I decided to stay as long as possible and try to recuperate before assessing the situation any further and taking my next course of action. I laid there for what felt like hours with the blankets covering the bottom of my legs, staring at the brown splotches on a ceiling that was all white once. After a while, I had them all memorized and I fell back to sleep. My brain flashed back to images of getting my ass kicked by raiders. I could see their leader in his jet black mohawk, grabbing my baseball bat and quickly using the opposite end against me. I tried to wake myself up, but not before I felt the stinging pain of my own weapon bludgeoning me over and over as I was stripped and left for dead. Finally, I forced myself awake and widened my eyes to keep from slipping back into the same nightmare. Breathing heavily and sweating, I looked across the room and saw, standing in front of me, a cute little girl, only about 6 or 7, with blonde hair and bright blue eyes, wearing coveralls over an old Bob the Builder t-shirt. It's not often I see little girls, and the few glimpses of children I have had in the last few years were not pretty. The landscape is no place for a child. Even the child inside must die. "You want some water?" she asked. It's been so long since I've heard the sound of a child's voice, I'd forgotten just how annoying they are. I also forgot how thirsty I was until she mentioned it. "Yeah," I responded. "Okay, I'll go get some." She ran out through the door to what looked like a hallway. She seemed happy enough. I saw no signs of abuse. Anyone who keeps small children as company without raping or murdering them should be a little bit trustworthy at least. Then again, it could be a trap, you never know. About 3 minutes later, the little girl came back in with a full plastic cup of water. "Here you go," she said as she handed me the cup. I thought for a second about whether or not it might be poisoned, then I drank it anyway. Poison is tedious and useless if you want someone dead right away. It's an especially bad idea if you're keeping someone alive for a purpose like information or rape. The water went down smooth and did a more than efficient job of quenching my thirst. I drank the whole cup, even if half would do. You never know when you're going to find water again. After I finished the drink, I handed the cup back to the little girl. Without saying anything, she ran out of the room, and a man entered and leaned on the doorframe. For a moment, I didn't recognize him. Then I saw. It was the angel that saved me on the road. Perhaps not an angel after all. The man's face was clearer now. He was an older man with short, white hair that bled into a short, white beard. He was topless and his gut stuck out like a watermelon. Below it, he wore blue jeans tucked into black leather boots. "You were nearly dead when I found you." His voice was gruff and harsh and yet strangely comforting. "My name's Jonathan. The little girl who just brought you water was Margot. I don't know what kind of name scum is, but I doubt your parents were that rude." "I had parents," I answered. "And I had a longer name, but I prefer if folks just call me scum."
"Man might have done something real nasty to earn a name like that."
"Maybe. But what I did is irrelevant now. All you have to worry about is what I do now, Jonathan."
"True. I'll be keeping an eye on you, scum. No matter how often or how easily you might receive ass whoopings on the highway."
I didn't bother defending myself. "Where's my fish?"
"Out here, in a bowl. Your plastic bag was starting to leak, but I'm sure we can find you a new one."
"Why'd you keep her alive?"
"Some of us aren't as hard-hearted as everyone else in the world, scum, but you gotta have grit if you want to survive. There's a difference between grit and hatred. Grit can be controlled, hatred can't. Anyways, you're welcome to stay as long as you like."
"Thanks," I said under my breath just as he turned around to walk away, but I knew he still heard me. I couldn't see his face, but I figured he was smiling. The next 3 days were uneventful. I slept mostly. Margot would bring me water, and every now and again I would have to sit up to shit and piss into a bucket next to the bed. I don't like spending long periods of time doing nothing. You wind up thinking too much and your brain plays tricks on you. I try not to make plans too much and I hate analyzing my past, but when nothing is happening in the present, there's not much else to do. I thought a lot about Jonesy and I making runs together. One time he pulled a car out of a ditch. I thought about some of the girls of my past, too. My biggest failure was a fellow wanderer named Miranda. I wish I told her how much I liked her before she left. She was hot and smart, and then she just left and I never saw her again. This is what I meant about the past. You dig up shit that's best left buried. Jonathan was nice enough to lend me some water for a sponge bath by the third day. He lent me something else, too. She walked in, and for a split second I felt like Miranda was back, standing in front of me. But it couldn't be. If Miranda did return, I'd simply turn her aside anyway, and I didn't need whoever this girl was either. But I did need a bath. She had bright green eyes and short, dirty blonde hair, and her face was clean and bright, despite her surroundings. It was an unnatural brightness. It almost distracted from the white t-shirt, which showed off her hard, pink nipples quite delicately. She didn't say anything, just reached down into the bucket with the sponge and started wiping me down. Finally, I tried to prompt a conversation out of her. "Where were you since I got here?"
"Busy."
Her voice was quiet and soft, but somehow stern and forceful, like she knew what she wanted without having to say it. "What's your name?" I asked. She had worked down to my chest at this point.
"People call me Hess."
"Hess. Hess isn't pretty enough for you." It was a stupid remark. She didn't respond. We sat in silence until she had worked her way down to the bottom of my abdomen. At this point, I was still wearing my boxers.
"I'm going to need you to take your boxers off," she said, though I was reluctant to do so.
"You're still young. How old are you?"
"Old enough to know what a dick looks like."
I was still reluctant.
"I'm gonna clean it, not suck it, if that's what you're afraid of."
I reached down and slowly slipped them off. She looked mildly impressed, though quickly hid it. She cleaned the rest of me and then dried me with an old towel. I slipped my boxers back on as she lifted the bucket and carried it to the door.
"Hey, thanks, that was..."
I struggled to find a suitable word for a second.
"Kind."
"Don't worry about it," she said, facing away from me as she walked out the door. I lied back down in my bed and closed my eyes.
As I slept, I dreamt about Hess, lying next to me in a beautiful Victorian home sometime long ago. She stared deep into my eyes, held me close, and whispered how she was joking about sucking my dick earlier, before doing just that. I woke up with my one good pair of boxers ruined. I needed a good lay to stop all these pesky wet dreams. After a few more days, I was well enough to get up and walk around. It wasn't a nice house, but it was still a house. One story, three bedrooms, peeled paint, a small washroom, and a kitchen, dining room, and living room out in the front. I walked into the living room. Suki was happily swimming in an old measuring cup on an end table. Next to it, there was one large couch, strangely preserved, pushed against the black wall. Margot was sitting on it, looking out the window. I sat next to her. Staring out the window, we could see a power station off in the distance, though no smoke rose from its stacks. Even from here, I could see how abandoned it was. "You can join us for supper," said Margot. "Sure," I responded. I shouldn't go anywhere until these wounds healed, and there was no way I was going to turn down a free meal. I sat silently next to Margot for the next hour or so until Jonathan came in.
"Supper's ready," he announced.
As we sat down to eat, I was introduced to the fourth member of the family.
"This is my wife, Ellen,"
Jonathan said while pointing to the withered form of what must have once been a woman, sitting in an old wheelchair in the corner of the room. She had lost most of her hair, and her head dropped to one side as drool seeped out of her mouth. She didn't make a sound.
"She was paralyzed and damaged in her brain during one of the conflicts."
Jonathan pulled a chair out for me to sit down, and I obliged. He sat down himself across from me. Margot was already sitting to my left, and Hess came in next from out of the kitchen carrying a pot with scrambled eggs in it. She placed some eggs and a piece of toast on each plate, and then gave one plate to each of us before sitting down. "Thanks," I said as she gave me my plate, and I could hear her whisper a soft, "You're welcome," under her breath. She sat down and we began to eat.
"This whole area was on the grid up until about a month ago," said Jonathan. "Then it all just shut down. I kept the generator going for when we really need it, but generators need gas, and it's a precious commodity these days."
"I've seen men kill for gas," I interjected.
"I could believe it,"
Jonathan nodded in agreement. "I've almost done the same myself," I said. Jonathan laughed. Then I decided just to wander.
"Wandering aimless can leave a man dry and empty,"
said Jonathan. He didn't understand. He didn't see things the way I did. "I love it," I said. "I wouldn't be me without the landscape. I'd be empty, working for the man or something. I couldn't hack it. Out there, it's freedom. You fight to survive. That's real life. No bullshit in that."
"Watch your language," said Hess.
"Sorry." "It ain't nothing I haven't heard before," said Margot.
"That doesn't make it right," Hess corrected her. "And don't say ain't nothing. It isn't anything."
"Whatever," said Margot, and she resumed eating. Hess gave her a dirty look and resumed her meal as well. I was already done mine.
"Jesus, boy, you eat fast," said Jonathan.
"Bad habit I picked up from the landscape. You can't take too long to eat. You never know who's watching."
"Would you like some more?" asked Hess.
"Now, girl, don't go offering what we don't have,"
Jonathan corrected her.
"He can have some of mine."
"Thank you, but that won't be necessary," I said.
"It's okay, I don't think I can eat anymore."
"I'll take it," said Margot.
"Margot, that's very rude. He's our guest."
"It's all right. She can take it." Margot was ecstatic as Hess piled the rest of her eggs on her plate.
"Besides, she's a growing girl. She needs nutrition."
"Yeah,"
Margot agreed with me.
"Excuse me," Hess said as she left the table and walked quickly toward the washroom.
"Hess and Margot, are they...
my kids?" "No. We found them wandering just like you, cold and shivering in the rain. Little Margot was only 3 years old."
"Three and a half,"
Margot corrected him.
"That's right, three and a half."
Jonathan patted her on the head as she chewed on some eggs.
"We took these two in and gave them a home, a safe place to stay. We did the same for you."
"Yeah, well, thanks for the charity, but I won't be staying. Soon as I'm healed, I'm out of here, and back out there where I belong."
"Suit yourself,"
said Jonathan. Well, I'm going to go excuse myself, I said, getting up from the table. Jonathan was done, but he stayed with Margot, who was still finishing her eggs. I walked down the hallway and opened the door to the bathroom. I didn't stop to think that Hess would still be in there. I walked in on her slouched over the toilet, breathing heavily. She motioned with her right arm for me to close the door and leave. I wasn't sure if she saw who had opened the door, but I obliged and closed it. Then I walked back down the hall and returned to my room. I sat on the bed, and a few minutes later Hess walked in and sat next to me. She was still breathing heavily, and her hair was disheveled.
That was you in the bathroom, wasn't it?
Sorry, I didn't know you were still in there.
Are you sick?
Scum, I'm pregnant. I might have been a little more shocked, except that I saw most of the signs and figured it might be an option. I figured. How far along is it?
I don't know. A few months, maybe?
Who's the father? I already knew it was Jonathan. It was just a matter of getting her to admit it.
I don't know. It was Jonathan, wasn't it? I said I don't know.
Her voice wavered a little, though it never rose in loudness.
Right, well, it's not my problem anyways.
Hess got up and started to walk out of the room.
Hess, you want my advice?
Abort the thing as soon as it's born, or before if possible. This world is no place for a baby.
Go fuck yourself, scum!
Her voice finally raised slightly and she marched away down the hall, sniffling tears. I sat on the bed alone for a while, reflecting on my own childhood, the nurtured life of a baby, suckling my mother's teat. That was a different time and a different world. This was a simpler world and simpler things weren't meant to last. I hadn't seen any babies in years. I woke up the next day feeling better than ever, though I was still wearing my old clothes. My pants had been cleaned and returned to me, and I was still shirtless with my bandages covering my arm and half my torso. I knew I was healing, though. I was feeling better already. I walked out to the living room. Jonathan was force-feeding his wife some eggs from the night before. I interrupted him.
Hey, you want to help me? I need some supplies. I gotta get my shit together, because as soon as I'm better, I'm out of here.
Jonathan kept feeding his wife without turning around to face me.
What makes you think I'll help you?
You said it yourself that I might have done some pretty nasty things to earn my name. I don't want to do anything nasty to you, but I won't be nice if I don't get what I want.
You're bluffing, scum. You couldn't hurt me in your state anyways.
Yeah? Is that what you said to Hess when you took advantage of her?
I finally got his attention and he turned around to face me.
What did you say?
You got her pregnant. You're not exactly a perfect angel either.
I didn't touch that girl!
Now he was angry. He threw his fork on the ground, splattering scrambled eggs everywhere.
Give me my supplies.
I heal you, then you come in here, insult me, and ask for supplies? You really are scum, you know that?
I am what I am, but I need supplies. A decent shirt, leather gloves, a backpack with a map of the area, a compass, food, water, and rope. You never know when you'll end up needing rope.
Fuck you. I'll give you a shirt, maybe shoes if you're lucky, but that's it.
Then I'll take what I need.
Over my dead body.
We'll see. I've got a week, maybe two, before I'm well enough to leave. We'll deal with this again by then, but I'm gonna get some supplies, and whether I have to kill you for them or not is inconsequential.
I walked away before he had time to respond. The next week was mostly unmemorable. Lots of silent meals and moments alone in the spare room. The temperature was starting to drop. It was a cold spell, but it signaled the end of summer and the coming doom of winter. Winter had almost killed me a few times, and I tried not to think about it. Margot was the only one I hadn't turned against me, and she knew better than to hang out with me too long. Later that week, when I was sitting on my bed, she walked in and sat next to me. She didn't say anything for a few minutes. Then finally she got up the nerve to speak to me.
My sister's mad at you. She called you a dirty word.
Oh?
Yeah, it's okay, though. I'm not mad at you.
Thanks.
Are you gonna stay here with us?
No, I have to be leaving soon. I think I've already overstayed my welcome.
Where will you go?
I don't know.
Well, how can you go anywhere if you don't know where you're going?
I stared at the floor for a moment, thinking about her statement. Where was I going? I guess I'm going nowhere, I said. But nowhere is just as good a place as any other. It's a place where no one bothers you and you can do whatever you want and be free.
D
Do you have any friends or family in Nowhere?
No, you don't need any. Nowhere sounds lonely. I didn't know what to say. I guess she was right. Sometimes it was lonely. But loneliness is like a cold pool. Eventually, discomfort turns to contentment, which turns to enjoyment.
Don't you have some chores to do or something? I asked.
Nope.
Well, I've got something I should tend to myself.
As I said it, I heard a crash in the living room, followed by a scream and several thuds.
Stay here, I said, holding out my hand to stop Margot from following me. I stood up and ran into the living room. I wanted to tell Jonathan that I was sorry for what I had said, that it was only my pride speaking and that I didn't really need his supplies. I'm a survivor. I could find them some other way. I really wanted to apologize, but it was too late. He was already dead, his body lying on the floor under the body of his wife, both of them beaten to death, fresh blood seeping from fresh wounds pooled onto the hardwood floor. I turned around and saw him, the man with the jet black mohawk, standing across from the bodies, surrounded by his thugs. One of them was holding an old wooden bedpost with Jonathan and Ellen's blood dripping off the end and onto the top of his boot. The man with the jet black mohawk was holding Hess with one hand on her mouth and one hand holding a pocket knife up to her neck. I was facing a choice here. I could turn and run and save my own hide, or I could stay and possibly sacrifice two lives in an attempt to save them. My ribs were mostly healed at this point, but my arm was still a little iffy. I figured running would be my best option, so I bolted for the door. Unfortunately, they had a raider blocking it. I should have expected that.
You a fucking idiot?
The raider questioned me from behind his aviator sunglasses. Apparently I am. I should have seen this from a mile off. All right, you win. What do you want from me? A blow, a fuck, a pinch? Let's just get it over with.
Nah, 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 you little sieve. We ain't rapers. Matador don't allow raping in the clan. He's gonna want to talk to you. Got some unfinished business, I reckon.
He was holding a golf putter, and I really didn't feel like messing with that. He escorted me to the man in the jet-black mohawk. Matador, I guess. He had barely moved, his knife still pressed against Hess's neck.
I'll trade your life for hers, he said in a soft monotone as I stepped back in front of him.
Fuck that! She don't mean shit to me! Kill her instead! I don't want her! I want you, you fucking sieve!
Matador tossed Hess aside. She landed harshly on the hardwood floor. Then he charged after me with his knife. Time slowed down for a second while I thought about how much this whole thing sucked. He was about to hit me with a knife. He was aiming for my chest and I still had a cast on my arm.
My cast! That's it! I can use it for defense!
I raised it up to catch the blow.
It worked!
The knife stabbed into the papier-mâché with a crunch and then made its way into my arm a little. Only the tip, though, not enough to do any serious damage. However, it was embedded deep enough to remove the knife from Matador's hand as I lurched back a little. I pulled the knife from my arm. Blood oozed out of the cast from where it had stuck in. I had the advantage now, but I couldn't use it stupidly. Matador's boys wouldn't interfere. This wasn't their revenge. It wasn't their dog I killed. Matador ran on emotions, I could tell. If I got him mad enough, he'd be stupid enough to do anything.
Look who's got the upper hand now, shit pile! Now I can gut you like your low-ridden canine!
Matador didn't say anything. He just ran at me like I knew he would. Predictability is so boring sometimes, but it's always reliable. He charged at me, probably assuming I was going to try and stick him in the front. Not gonna happen. That would make it entirely too easy for old Maddie to grab my hand and use my own weapon against me. Instead, I used my good arm and swung it around his side, stabbing him in the back where he didn't expect it. I hit just beside his shoulder blade and he fell down on top of me. Having 200 pounds fall on you while you're recovering from an injury isn't fun, but it was necessary in order to defeat my opponent. I reached around and pulled the knife back out, then I shoved him off of me with my bad arm and one of my legs. He flopped to the ground next to me. I stood up to face the rest of Matador's men.
He's gonna bleed out, and it's gonna be real painful, because right now he can barely breathe. I may have hit one of his lungs, but it's too tough to tell. If you leave now, you may be able to save him. Otherwise, we can fight while he dies, your choice.
They stood there for a few seconds like dumb, drooling dogs. I knew they'd drag him off, though, and after a moment's pondering, they did.
They just started to leave when we heard a scream coming from my bedroom. It was Margot. Hess and I ran into the room and found one of Matador's men cradling Margot against his body with a gun pointed to her head. She screamed again as we entered. "Give me the child," he said. Hess and I just stood there. I don't think either of us really knew what to do. Then Hess made a motion as if to move forward.
"Don't do that! You do that and I'll kill her! You hear me? Give her to me or I'll kill her!"
This guy was a loose cannon, the type of character that Matador would only have in his group as a mad dog type. Now it turns out he molests kids. Margot'd be better off dead, but there was no telling Hess that. I couldn't do anything either. It was unlikely that the gun was loaded, but I've seen people spin that wheel and land on the bankrupt square, so I wasn't ready to take that chance. Together, Hess and I made a choice. We let her go. Chances are she wouldn't survive, but Hess had no other options other than putting her out of her eventual misery, and I knew she wouldn't do that. Instead, she stayed there, frozen. Margot was screaming and struggling, but she was too small and it was no use. Then that motherfucker crawled out the window, holding a gun to a screaming child's face. Hess and I made another decision. Neither of us said it out loud, but we both knew it. If we ever saw that bastard again, we'd make him pay. Both of us. I had let things like this go in the past, but this time was different. Maybe it was personal. Maybe I'd seen too many kids get hurt and this was the last straw. Maybe both. The whole thing happened so fast, it seemed like a blur when it was over. In an instant, Margot was gone and there was nothing we could do. I'd never felt that frustrated before. Hess collapsed on the bed next to me, her head on my lap, a river of tears streaming from her eyes. For the first time in a long time, I felt truly helpless. When we returned to the living room, Matador was gone along with all his men. Jonathan and his wife were still lying dead on the ground, and Suki, the only unaffected party, was still swimming happily in her new home. It wouldn't be her home for long, though. "I'm out of here, whether you follow me or not," I told Hess.
"I'm coming.
Here's the part where he asked me to help you find those assholes that took your sister.
If you don't, then I'm going alone. As long as there's a chance she's still alive, then I'm going to find her."
"I admire your dedication, Hess, but it's a lost cause. I can't help you. We'll both get killed, or worse. Plus, what's in it for me? I do jobs, but I don't do favors. Sorry."
"I'll have sex with you."
"What?"
"I don't have anything to trade, and I don't have any trade papers. It's all I have to offer."
Hess was desperate, and I could tell she wouldn't be doing this if she had a choice. I felt bad for her. "Okay, it's a deal." "Damn, it's been a long time since I've had sex with anyone."
"Fine,"
said Hess, her spirits crushed. She'd warm to me eventually. "We've got 2 more days here. Tomorrow we're going to grab our supplies, pack up what we need, and then we're going to get one last nice warm sleep together. Then you're going to have sex with me after I wake up. I'm a morning person, and I figure neither of us are in much of a mood now. After that, we torch the place and leave."
"Why do we have to torch it?
Would you want to come back here even if we did find your sister?" Hess didn't answer. "This place would be swarming with raiders or something worse by then. If we torch it, then they ain't coming, and you ain't coming back." Hess didn't answer again. I was tired. I walked back to my room, collapsed on the bed, and fell asleep. I dreamt about what led to this whole mess, my encounter with Matador's gang. I had passed his clubhouse a few times in the past, enough to know where it was and enough to know that intruding was a bad idea. It was an old steel warehouse, likely used for some form of industry ages ago, and it was always guarded day and night. I'd only seen the man once, though. Before he attacked me, that is. He was standing outside his clubhouse with his signature mohawk, smoking a cigarette and staring out into nothingness. I was passing by for some reason, I can't even remember now. Jonesy was gone by this point, so it was just me, and he didn't even see me. I was practically invisible to this man. He always had this one stupid dog tied up outside the clubhouse that used to bark like the bitch it was every time I came too close. It was going crazy and Matador didn't even care. Maybe there was something special rolled up in that cigarette of his, or maybe he's always like that. I don't know. It scared me to see a man that empty, though. Empty people are always the ones you have to watch out for. Anyways, it was a few months later when I was minding my own business, and out of nowhere, a stupid dog decided to attack me. I didn't see its owner around, so I killed the thing and thought nothing of it. Normally I like dogs, but I hated this thing. It was big and black and smelly and loud, and now it was dead. What I wasn't expecting was a few minutes later when Matador appeared and the wrath of God fell upon me. If that stupid dog had just left me alone, none of this shit would have happened. I slept in the next day before prepping for the long trip ahead. You never know when you're going to get a good night's sleep in this place. I spent the rest of the day preparing for the journey ahead. I avoided Hess mostly. She was still grieving and couldn't be of much use to me yet. I didn't see her much, but I think she was doing something with the bodies of Jonathan and Helen. It's just as well. I'll let her get all that bullshit out of the way so there's less chance of her bugging me about it on the road. I started by collecting as much water as I could. Jonathan's place had its own well, so it was really an endless supply. I filled as many old water bottles as I could. I also took as much non-perishable food as I could find. I put all the food and all the water on the counter. I could return to them later. Fill the gaps in mine and Hess's bags with as much food and water as possible. Then I went about raiding the rest of the house for things that might be useful. Maps of the area, a compass, a few lighters, a flashlight with some extra batteries, a pair of binoculars, a few tools, a few utensils, anything that was useful. Anything else was getting torched. I also brought rope because you never know when you're going to need some rope. I found some pants and a good shirt in Jonathan's dresser. It was black with a yellow smiley face on it and the words, "Well, at least I'm not dead yet," written underneath. I put a heavier flannel jacket on top of that and completed the ensemble with some welding goggles that would be useful against the blazing sun on bright days. Finally, I had to find a weapon. It was lying on the cement in the garage, pushed up against the wall so that I almost never saw it. A piece of rebar, 4 or 5 feet in length. Just enough that I could balance it in one hand, but also use both hands once my other arm healed. I took a few practice swings. It was perfect. I could crack skulls with one swing, or I could stab with either end. It would penetrate skin easy enough, and I could use it on animals or people. I felt like a kid on Christmas with this thing. I couldn't wait to use it. I added the rebar to the other supplies I had found. Then I packed all the supplies into one of the two backpacks and loaded the space in the first bag along with the entire second bag with food and water. Then I walked back into the living room. Hess was sitting on the couch staring out the window at the sunset. Suki was still swimming in her temporary new home next to Hess. I walked over and took the seat next to her. "I just can't get comfortable," she said. "What?" I responded. "Every time I try to get comfortable, something changes." "Things change, Hess. Everything's always changing, actually. Sooner you accept that, the sooner you can learn to survive out there. You can't get comfortable." "I guess not. Come on, let's get to bed." We stripped down to our undies and crawled into my bed together. Hess didn't sleep. I could tell she wouldn't be here if she didn't have to. I could also tell that a part of her was glad that she was. I wrapped us in blankets and clenched her tight. I rested my head on hers. This was exactly what we needed, and we both knew it. When I woke up the next day, Hess was still lying next to me, sleeping. I crept out of bed, had a shower, and got dressed. Finally, I went into the kitchen where my stuff was waiting and grabbed a bread bag for Suki. I took some scraps from the meal Hess and I had the night before and crushed them into her bowl. Then after she ate, I took the bowl, dumped it into the bag, and tied it up. Then I placed her in my backpack. She was the last thing I had to pack. I walked back into the bedroom. Hess was still lying in the bed waiting for me. "Aren't you going to have sex with me?" she asked. "We wasted a whole day already. If we're going to find your sister alive, we can't be fucking around." Hess sat up in the bed. "Now hurry up, have a shower and get dressed. I'll make some breakfast. Then we torch the place." Hess did as I said. She changed into a pair of gray capris, a white blouse, and a blue knitted toque. We ate breakfast together in silence. "Grab your bag and get outside," I told her once we had finished. I had a small, nearly empty can of kerosene I had found in the garage the day before. I crumpled up some old newspapers on top of the couch in the living room and dumped what was left of the kerosene on top of them. Then I grabbed my bag, took out the barbecue lighter, and lit one of the papers. It went up in flames almost immediately. Soon the other papers caught, and by the time I walked out of the house, the whole couch was ablaze. I walked out the front door and met Hess on the road in front of the house. "Come on, let's go." "Don't worry, it'll burn," I told her as she stared somberly at the house. As we walked away, we could hear the house beginning to crackle from the fire. I looked back just once and saw the flames crawling up the metal siding through the front window, with huge plumes of smoke billowing into the sky. I would be lying if I said it wasn't quite a sight.